Welcome to Hanks for the Memories. There's no crying in podcasting. This is episode 21 of League of Their Own from 1992. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski. And Mike, we were talking before we started recording that you and I recorded a podcast about this not 9 months ago when we spoke about it on The Contenders, another show here on the network with Tobin and Eisland, both of whom have been on the Tom Tom Club. We're back here on the baseball diamond, and we have brought with us two very special guests to talk about this movie again. But here we are again, Mike.
I'm glad to be here again, you know? It doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but we've covered a lot of ground.
Absolutely. So first up, making his Hanks for the Memories debut. He was over on the Cruise Club episode of Top Gun, our resident year 2000 action expert, neither of which really applies here, but we have Dan the Duke Hayden. Hello, Duke.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Thank you for joining us to talk about baseball and no crying in it.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And yes, it's true. There is no crying in baseball.
Ooh, well, we welcome you into the fold for this monumental occasion. Also with us tonight, returning champion from the Splash episode of Hanks of the Memory. She has her very own podcast here on the network, Wistful Thinking. She is also the very special honored guest this entire lap of Too Fast, Too Forever, the Fast and the Furious podcast that I do with Joe too. We have Kara Gale-Regan. Hello, Kara.
Hello. And I know that you said that there is no crying in podcasting, but I'm probably going to cry when I'm talking about this movie because I love it so much.
Well, you cried while watching it. How many times did you cry watching it? At least once or the whole time?
Not the whole time. Let's see. I wrote down a few of the times that I cried, but it was definitely more than that. First cry during the tryout montage. Mm-hmm. Second cry was just after the tryout montage because there's a woman who can't read her name. And
yes, Shirley Baker.
Know, yeah, might start crying now.
I worried that as soon as I got into this line of questioning, I knew we were headed down a melancholy route, in a good way, I guess.
Yeah, so several more periodic cries throughout the movie, and then I start crying during the World Series game, and it's just a growing sob through the end of the movie and for several hours afterwards.
Several hours. Well, we are here now, at least a day, I hope, removed from you watching this, so if any tears will be fresh tears, new tears, so that'll be a podcast tears.
Yeah, I'm really glad I watched this last night.
So before we get into this movie in particular, Duke, I know that you were on our Cruise Club episode. We talked a little bit about Tom Cruise. In terms of Tom Hanks, do you have a favorite Tom Hanks movie? And do you remember the first one or the first time you remember either the first movie of his you saw or the first time you kind of were aware of Tom Hanks?
I think, especially in the 90s, you know, he was in so many amazing like movies. I think probably like most of you, the first time I watched a Tom Hanks movie was Big. I think that was the first time I was, you know, probably that or Turner and Hooch. Those are probably the earliest I can remember. But I mean, it's kind of hard for me to say. I like Tom Hanks a lot. I've seen everything he's done since. It's just those first movies. I can't really quite recall. It's probably Big or Turner and Hooch.
All right. And do you have a favorite one of his?
That's really tough. I just probably say either Saving Private Ryan. Probably Saving Private Ryan.
All right.
Very exciting. All right. That's very cool. We are not quite there yet, but we have covered both Big and Turner and Hooch. Now, have you watched the extended cut of Big, which makes it way less funny?
No, I was not even aware of it.
Do not seek it out. It's not bad. It's just, you know, compared to the regular one, I think, Mike, you and I both watched the extended cut, and then, like, as soon as we finished, just sort of, we're like, let's watch the regular one and just see what's going on, like, separately, and we're like, oh, this flies by.
I think it's wildly different tone. Yeah. There's one great scene, though, if you can look up the tuxedo shopping sequence that they omitted.
Yes.
One scene they should have kept.
So now, I want to point out that we have been kind of through the ringer here on Hanks of the Memories. This is episode 21, but we are finally there. We've been, you know, shouting it from the rooftops, Mike, for episode after episode that this was going to be the one that turned the corner. Boy, oh boy, did we finally turn the corner. It has been a rough road to hoe up to this point, but here we are. Not only did I like this movie more than when I watched it for The Contenders, not only did I sort of appreciate it more, understand it more, what it's doing, I think it's just the relief of, like, knowing no more Radio Flyer, at least for a while, right? Like, we know for a while this is going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
But just everything about this time worked so much better for me. And I'm just so glad that, you know, the past is behind us and we are now on this, like, unimpeachable run. That the phrase I keep using over and over again, like, basically all classics.
Yeah, I mean, well, for me, we were almost there with Bonfire of the Vanities, got really close. Yeah, man, like, watching it this time, it was sort of just, like, washing over me like a warm hot chocolate in a blanket or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, this movie is, I love it. It's so good to begin with, but then just in conjunction with what we're doing, and like you say, like the sort of, you know, things we've seen recently with Hanks and the time we've taken to get here, like it definitely had more payoff this rewatch.
Wonderful. Let's begin to heap praise upon this movie.
Wait, Joey, our new segment.
Oh God, right. Plot summary. I forget. Mike, please tell the listeners, if they do not know what this movie is about, which is available to, if you have, I know that a lot of people probably don't have Showtime, but if you have Showtime or Showtime Anytime, available to stream right now for free, so go watch it if you haven't. Mike, what is A League of Their Own about?
I'll keep it real short and simple if I can, but it's World War II. The men are off to war. There's no more baseball because it's all men and they're all going to fight. And so a candy bar owner gets the pretty bright idea that he will employ women in a new league, a new women's baseball league. And that's exactly what the movie's about. And it follows two sisters from the farm to the big league, all the sort of trials and tribulations they have to go through. And they meet Tom Hanks, who turns out to be their manager. And he's sort of this washed up drunk that used to be great, and you know, he decides to take the job, and together everybody makes it to the World Series, where it's sister versus sister, and it's super exciting and very tense, and man, this is a really great movie. So that's it in a nutshell.
And our team loses in the end. The Rockford Peaches lose. Well, Kara, to kick things off in terms of our favorite moments, to heap praise upon this movie that Mike so beautifully summed up right there, Kara, I'm going to give you the opportunity. Do you want to go first or do you want to go last? Do you want to share all of the things that you love about this movie, or do you want to let other people share theirs then sort of fill in the gaps? Because I feel like you probably have the most to say. Would you have to go first or last?
Yeah, let's do that. I'll go last.
All right. Well, Duke, let's start with you. What is your favorite part? If you have to pick a favorite moment or scene or character or interaction, what's your favorite part of A League of Their Own?
Where to start? I mean, I love Hans Zimmerman's music that he put behind this movie. Mm. When I think of this movie, I can immediately hear like the kind of overture in the background. Besides that, I really like Madonna and Rosie O'Donnell's friendship.
Oh, their little buddy comedy is so great. I would watch a whole movie just about the two of them.
It's delightful, yeah. And obviously, Tom Hanks' one-liners. He has a lot of them in this movie.
Speaking on that score, it's true. Like, there's this great sort of big band, like, aspect to it that just keeps the movie chugging along. It's, like, you know, real bombastic at times, but then it also can really swing, and other times, like, be very quiet. It's really cool.
I think it adds to, and it's also not, like, too much. It's kind of in keeping with the movie. It's got a very light touch. It's a cheery movie. It's not too deep. It's just very enjoyable and easy to watch. I've always thought of this movie as just like a good sit down on a Sunday afternoon and enjoy a movie that I liked watching when I was a kid with like my mom or something like that.
Yeah, I think that there is something about a sports movie in which you kind of know, unless it really turns the genre on its head, you kind of know where it's going to wind up. Like, they're going to get to the championship game, and either they're going to win or they're going to lose. So I think within the sort of the trappings and the confines of that, you know, it's nothing that, like, you have to sort of think too hard about. But what I think makes this movie work well is that it takes the twist on what a normal baseball movie is and adds in a lot of life and the female perspective and all of the female cast and the interactions and the relationships. And I think it goes kind of deeper into the characters. Like, we sort of know more, I think, about more of the players on the team than you do in most other sports movies. And that might not be explicitly true, but I feel like in the 2 hours that Penny Marshall has here to tell the story, I feel like we know a lot about a lot of these women. And I think that's really kind of special and exciting.
Yeah, I agree. We talked about this when we did Cinemakers, Amy Heckerling, that women directors tend to like weave more of a rich tapestry than their male counterparts. And I, like you were just saying, as far as most sports movies go, like, characters are so often these very kind of like broad brush strokes, but like there's a whole universe here, and like every character is unique and like kind of dimensional in a wonderful way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I feel like in lots of sports movies, people are like very stereotypical, and here, mm-hmm. like knowing more than just one thing about each of the women on the team, or most of them, fleshes it out. Like, even if, you know, you're not quite sure, you realize it or anything, but by the end, you do really feel like you know this team or at least I do, better than some other sports teams in other movies.
And the characters are all very different. I think that helps a lot, too. They're all at different stages in their lives in some aspects. Some of them have families, some of them have husbands, some of them have children, and it's a nice little touch that you really, like you said, you wouldn't have in, like, the male stereotypical, like, football or baseball movie.
And also, like, what a rare opportunity to see this many women in a movie. And the fact that they are all, like, individuals and not just this, like, oh, look at these ladies. And this is one of the things that, like, always makes me cry. I cry when I watch women's sports on TV, too, which is that, like, we so rarely get to see women on screen using their bodies for something other than sex or childbearing. And, like, here they get to use their butt, like, fully inhabit their bodies and be so active and use them in such a wonderful and entertaining way.
And what I love, and I know that you read all this too, Kara, because we were talking before we started recording about the trivia, is that a lot of the trivia about this movie, a lot of the behind-the-scenes making of this movie, is that there are so many names that were considered for, like, inclusion in this movie, different roles, different parts, or whatever. But Penny Marshall was basically like, if you can't play baseball, you're not in this movie. Like, I don't care if you're a good actor or not, but if you can't play, if you can't look like you're playing, you're not going to make it. And I think what really backs up your point beautifully, Kara, is that not only are they, like, able to show them, like, doing something with their body, but, like, they all look the part. You know what I mean? Like, they're all playing and running and hitting and fielding and...
And all of the, like, bruises and scrapes and other injuries that you see on the women in this movie are real things that happen to them. They're not makeup, which I think is very cool.
Yeah.
It is. I think I was reading that they were trying to teach some of the cast members to slide, and, like, a whole bunch of them got concussions on the first day just trying... And, yeah, the one girl who had that huge shiner on her thigh, she had that for something like a year or something, the scar from that.
It is. I mean, it's a brutal sport. It's a non-contact sport, but there's so much physicality to it, and I think you see it here. And that's one of my favorite things about this movie. I don't know if it's my number one favorite thing, but, like, I just love how much baseball there is. Like, there's so much, and it looks real, and it looks authentic. Like, when Joe and I did, when we started Magic Mike's, our Channing Tatum podcast, and we did Coach Carter, one of the trivia things about that was that Channing Tatum had never picked up a basketball before that movie, or he never played basketball or something. So he had to, like, learn how to play basketball for that movie. And, like, there's a lot of basketball, but it doesn't always, like, it looks good, but it doesn't look as good as this baseball looks. Like, I think in certain movies, you can kind of tell when actors don't really feel comfortable or don't know mm-hmm. what they're doing. Like, it feels here that they all either, like, I know some of them, I think, like, Lori Petty played on the boys' teams growing up. Like, I think that either they all played baseball or softball, or, like, just were comfortable playing. Like, it feels genuine. And one of my favorite things about this movie is just how much of that there is.
Yeah. And, like, something that really speaks to the quality of the filmmaking is that I hate baseball. And I only realized, like, very recently that this is a baseball movie. Like, obviously it's a baseball movie. Duh. I see the baseball happening, but I never thought of it as a baseball movie, as this movie about a sport that, like, I never want to watch. And I always want to watch this movie.
Yeah, I think it's a testament to how just masterfully it's directed. Like, Penny Marshall, it's almost like an action movie, you know, the way she's covering the games and everything. And there's no special effects either, which is, you know that those are actual people hitting those actual hits, and it took as long as it took to get those takes, and it all came together so seamlessly, and there's so much of it, like you're saying. I do love that about it, though. It gets me excited for the sport in general, you know, where it's like, I know we're only seeing sort of the best parts, you know, and, like, most of baseball is not what we're seeing on the screen here, but it can be, you know, and that's
you
what...
You bite your tongue.
That's what excites... Hey, you know me, Joey. I became a big fan of a certain
team. I know you love baseball.
And I haven't always been the biggest, you know, sports movie fan as far as my character on the podcast goes. But yeah, I mean, I just think it's so well directed, you know, bottom line.
And one thing that is also in the trivia is that to sort of fill in the gaps of the storytelling and just sort of to have this kind of cohesive vision, Penny Marshall had them play a lot of baseball that wasn't scripted. I think they just filmed a lot of it. And I think that there's that element to it. Like, it just feels real because they're able to take, like you're saying, like, the stuff that isn't necessarily the most exciting things about baseball and remove that and just sort of have the hits and the plays and the catches and the whatever and make it feel real, but also make it exciting, which I think baseball movies, when they do it right, really do it right. Another one of my favorite things about this movie I love how angry Tom Hanks is all the time. Like, I think that it's a funny version of him that, like, we really haven't seen that much of yet.
We've had sort of touches of it, right? When he starts to explode or things, and he never gets angry per se, but he gets, like, super frustrated. But this was great because he's, like, yeah, he's fuming. He's a super grump in this movie.
He gained 30 pounds to the role. Like, he looks the part, he feels the part, he just seems sort of, you know, weighed down by the world. And we've had that kind of frustration, that growing anger, but I feel like he starts this movie like on a 9 and then like quickly gets to a 10. Like, he just, like, he's right there, like he's just about to burst, and he's just angry for so long. I love it because it's a new type of Hanks that we really haven't seen that feels genuine. But I also like that his bonding with Gina Davis in this movie eases him off that ledge and kind of returns him to being like a normal guy again. And I think that feels genuine. It doesn't feel rushed. It doesn't feel unearned. It feels like they actually sort of bond, and like she sort of like breaks him down a little bit. And I think that his evolution as a character, like, I thought, you know, before we watched this for the Contenders, I thought he was going to be in the movie a lot more than he is. Like, he's kind of like, he's maybe the top build or whatever, but he's firmly in the back seat. Like, this is Gina Davis's movie. It's Lori Petty's movie. It's the women on the team. It's their movie. He's just sort of orbiting them. But now that I sort of understood and appreciated where he fit into the story, I think that combining that with the growth that we've seen through these first, you know, 20-21 movies, it all comes together in a really great way.
And the studio wanted him and Gina Davis to get together in the movie, and they were even supposed to kiss at one point, but Penny Marshall didn't want to distract audiences with a love story, so she cut it out. And I feel like any other movie, that would have happened, and it fucking rules that it didn't happen in this one.
And I don't mind it, because, I mean, President of the United States Bill Pullman shows up, and it's just like, hey, I'm your husband. It's like, cool, I'm okay with that, that's fine.
You know what I found interesting about that when he shows up, though, is he has, like, a limp, like Hanks's character. And he kind of looks like a thinner version of Hanks's character, too. I was like, were they just trying? Is there something they still wanted to say? Something like she kind of ended up with him in a way, but not really. She's with her husband, but he's kind of, I don't know.
One other thing that I want to say, my favorite other moment is just when Gina Davis palms the fastball. When she catches the fastball with her bare hand, love it. But Mike, what about you? What are your favorite parts, favorite moment, favorite scene, favorite character in this movie?
It's tough. Like, love so much about it. This time around, though, I think the part I definitely laugh the hardest at is, so, you know, there's the famous scene where he yells, you know, no crying at baseball. But then later in the World Series, she does sort of like the same thing. And he comes up to her and he's like filled with rage, but he's just holding it back. And he's like squinting really hard, you know, and like gritting his teeth. And he has his hands up in front of his face. And he's just like he starts to speak very softly, like through his teeth, about how like this is something you got to work on for next season. That just cracked me up so hard, because, you know, it showed a level of growth for that character, in part because, you know, earlier in the movie he was yelling at this person, and later he wasn't. I mean, it's a very small thing, but I mean, he sold it so well. It was such a great moment.
He's got a fun evolution through the movie, from talking to Mr. Harvey, just trying to make a quick buck, trying to convince him that he's not a stupid drunk anymore, to being a stupid drunk and playing with his balls in the dugout.
He keeps drinking throughout the movie. He just sort of has an attitude adjustment, you know? Like, he becomes more of a happy drunk or stable drunk.
Well, Gina Davis does give him a soda at one point, and it seems like he's fine after that, so...
Gina Davis kind of just nudges him through the movie to be like a better person. Like, she's giving all the signals and telling the players what to do. And he almost like kind of looks like jealous. Like, what? Well, like, I should be the signals. He has an argument with her. And like, when she sits back down and sees him like kind of doing what he's supposed to be doing, she like kind of smiles like, yeah, look, I made the drunk do something.
I think he's a great character, like not just like one of the great Hanks characters, but like, you know, in a movie filled with really, you know, rich characters, you know, like there's a lot of ground to cover here. And like you said earlier, Joey, he's not really on screen that much. It's not really his movie, but he's one of the few men that have like a feature role. He kind of has to hold his own in a room full of like other really strong performances, and no one really has a lot of time to go too deep, but everybody is very rich and giving it their all.
All right, Kara, the time has come. What are your favorite things that we have not talked about yet? Hit us with everything that you love about this movie.
Okay, the solidarity between the women, like that moment that I talked about before, where the one woman can't read and then one of the other women in the group like realizes what's happening and she gets up and she walks over to her and like very quietly asks her if she can read and then she helps her. And there's so many like small moments like that throughout the movie. Or like when Betty Spaghetti finds out that her husband, oh God, I'm gonna start crying, that her husband died, you know, like all of the women rush to like take care of her and they take care of each other in this movie. And I love seeing that because that's how it works in the world too. And then there's so much that I so deeply love about this.
I do want to say, while you compose yourself, we did not originally, I don't think, put you on this episode. And I think you said something along the lines of, like, if you don't let me talk about this movie, I will never talk to you again. It wasn't
I would never
necessarily
say
that
that.
threatening, but it was like, that was the intent that I understood from it. So I want to make sure that people, I mean, not that your words are not articulating, but like, this means a lot. I know that, like, there's a lot here that means a lot. So,
Yeah. So this is like the first movie that ever made me really cry, like really, really, really cry. And it makes me really, really, really cry now for completely different reasons. And so it just, you know, it holds a very special place in my heart. But I can kind of like skip over all of the other stuff and talk about the things at the end that really get me going, that
sure.
I love so much, which is so like throughout the movie, Kit, the younger sister, is dealing with being in the shadow of this older sister who's the best in the league. She's the most beautiful woman on the planet. You know, it's like impossible for her, it feels like, to carve out a space for herself, to the extent that at one point they transfer her to another team, which is how they wind up playing each other in the World Series. The team that Kit is on winds up winning because she does something baseball-y. I don't even know what happens.
She hits what should be, I guess, a triple, but she runs through a stop sign and then essentially tries to make it into an inside the park home run, which she's out by a mile, but she bowls over her sister, who's playing catcher, and she knocks the ball loose, and so she's safe because the catcher has to hold on to the ball and keep the tag to sort of make an out. So she's out, but then she hits her with such force that she becomes safe.
Interesting. Okay, I didn't understand half of what you just said. But anyway, she wins the game. And so her team, the crowd is chanting her name. The team lifts her up and carries her out of the stadium. You know, and it's like this triumphant moment for this character that has felt so overshadowed and so marginalized throughout the movie. And then a little bit later, or maybe like right after that, I don't remember, but she's inside signing baseballs for these little girls who just are smiling their faces off and so excited and like so full of possibility. And she tells them to get dirty, which I love. And that makes me cry really hard. And then, so there's this framing device for the whole thing where, like, at the very beginning of the movie, it's actually modern day and we see Dottie all grown up. And then it goes back in time. And then at the end of the movie, all of the women on this team, and apparently only this one team, I don't understand why the other teams aren't there, but all of the women on this one team reunite at the Baseball Hall of Fame for an exhibit, the first ever exhibit on women in baseball, the first ever women to be inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. And they all see each other for the first time in decades, and they, you know, are talking about losing people in their lives and seeing each other again and those great times that they had. And oh God, it just really gets me. And then during the credits, there's footage of the actual women playing baseball. I can't handle it. It's too much. I love it so
This
much.
used to be my
Oh my God, every
playground.
time I hear that song too, I cry.
So I want to kind of pivot for a second and talk about the book ending, the way that the story begins and ends in modern day before we go back in time. And if I had to pick a least favorite moment, I don't want, and like, it's tough for me because there's so much of that, like what you described, Carol, like I love the emotion of it. I love seeing them play baseball. I just don't know, like, I think it's partly, again, sort of like nitpicking a thing because I love the rest of the movie so much, but like what doesn't really, like, I don't know if we necessarily need that framing device. And I think some of it works really well, and I love them getting inducted there, but it just feels like when the World Series ends, the buses ride off, like I feel like that's kind of like a nice ending there too.
Yeah, it could be, but I find reunions, especially after a long period of time has elapsed, like very powerful.
Yes.
Joey, you're not one to really care for the wraparound to begin with, as far as this show is concerned, or the shows we've been doing. Like, I don't, you know, I can't remember maybe once where you're like, it worked because it came back in like the middle of the movie or something, you know?
Yeah, like all I just keep thinking of like Don't Breathe, which is like the polar opposite of this movie in just about every way. But like, I hate like what he's saying, Carrot and Duke, is like, I hate when like a horror movie, especially like show like drops you in the middle of the or the beginning of the movie is just like the climactic scene, like a girl is like running down the street or whatever, and then like the end of the movie we find out that that's the girl that we've been following and she's running. It's like, yeah, we know, like, you showed this to us. Like, just have faith in like what you're building, you know what I mean? Like, this is a little bit different. Like, this I understand, like, this is whole like the framing device here is telling the main story via a flashback, and I appreciate that. I just don't know if we need it. And again, I don't think it's bad, and I think as it goes on, like, it's sort of like the type of joke where like you laugh and then you stop laughing and then you laugh again. Like, it's kind of like that structure where like I like the framing element and then it sort of goes on for too long and I'm like, I don't need this, and then it keeps going on, you're like, oh, this is actually really nice. And it feels like this weird blending. Like, I know that it's based on a true story and based on these real women and everything, and I just think that some of it is like, oh, like, let's show Tom Hanks here again, even though his character passed away. Like
here's John Lovitz, like, here's who he's based on.
Exactly. It's like this blending of like reality and fiction, and it just feels like we had left it with such a nice, like, after the game ends, like the beautiful moment that they share in the hallway, and then it just keeps going on. It's just like, I don't know if we need this. And I love what Kara loves about it, but I just, there's some about this that I just think that we could just excise it, kind of.
It's funny you say that, Joey, because like, I mean, I like the wraparound. I think it's good that it's there, but the thing I don't like about the movie, my thing, I think the thing I like least about it is how it's done. Like, I want the flashback sort of aspect. I mean, it's not like I want her to start narrating or anything in the middle of the movie, but I hate how, like, Gina Davis is doing the voiceover the same way, like, they did Christopher Reeves in Superman as a young kid. Like, I mean, it's obvious that woman is playing an older Gina Davis. I mean, I thought it was her in makeup, for crying out loud, like, the first several times.
And it's her voice is dubbed over the actress's voice.
And that's my least favorite part. Like, I think there's something to the structure that I like that pays off. I think what could have worked is maybe seeing her, like, on the airplane, you know, like, start it there or something, or seeing her just in transit. I don't know about that early on interaction at the house. It's just kind of wonky.
Yeah, I feel like the beginning doesn't even need to be there, and just have the end as like an epilogue.
That could be cool too. That would work. Like, you know, maybe nowadays she would morph into her older self or something. Or maybe at the end of the 90s she'd have morphed. I don't know if they're still doing that. But yeah, like, in some fashion I want it there, but I don't like the way it's sort of there.
It's been so long since I've seen this movie, I actually completely forgot that they had that portion in the beginning with her being older and her go. Like, I remember obviously the ending, because the ending, you're not alone here. The ending made me cry as well. But that ending really much stands out for me. But I couldn't even remember the original portion of her daughter, like, trying to get her out of her bedroom and onto the plane.
Well, I think it establishes that, like, she's just always kind of been a reluctant participant in this whole venture. No, I guess it just, like, reinforces that, because we see it when she's on the farm and doesn't want to leave either.
Well, that's part of the whole thing with, like, Jimmy telling her, you know, or Kit telling her. Well, everyone's telling her to do something exciting and do something big throughout the movie. And I guess it's her way of kind of looking back and saying, oh, yeah, I did. The very end when she's, you know, looking through the pictures and everything, and the final shot is of her and her sister.
Kara, is there stuff about this movie that doesn't work for you? Is there stuff here that you wish was better? Like, I know you love this movie seemingly with all of your heart, but is there stuff here that, like, you kind of wish either was removed or changed?
So there's, like, a very brief moment, and this is another thing that made me cry. So it's not that I don't like it about the movie. It's just, like, it's so brief that there's, like, a nod to segregation, like, racial segregation. At one point during a game, somebody, like, hits the ball into the area that it's not supposed to go. I don't know what the word for that is. Out of bounds something.
The foul line.
Sure. A foul ball. And it winds up in a section of the stadium that is segregated for people of color only. And a black woman walks out or she catches the ball and she walks out, and Gina Davis, like, without any hesitation is like, yeah, just throw it to me. And that's like a powerful moment of interracial baseball playing. But at the same time, it's like, I mean, and I don't know that the movie really could have gone into this anymore. You know, it's obvious like a whole other topic, but it's like still related, and obviously like racial segregation, the history of it is very much a part of our country and very much a part of baseball as well. So it's like, it's frustrating to me that it only like makes a passing glance at that, but I do appreciate that they like tried to acknowledge that, like, yes, these women got to go out and play ball while the men were off at war and, you know, have this like fulfilling career experience, but like they're all white women, you know, and women of color did not necessarily get those same experiences.
Not only that, she actually overthrows Gina Davis and hits the girl behind her that's like another 100 yards away.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, the girl like shakes off her hands. So not only is it showing, you know, obviously the segregation, it's showing that like she should be out there playing, like that she's that good.
Yeah, exactly.
And I wonder, so there was something that I read that the original version of this movie was like 4.5 hours long, which of course it would be because there's a lot of story to tell here. But I wonder, and I think I agree with you, Kara, that like it's difficult to kind of touch on that and not go into it. Like, I know that you sort of maybe want to touch on that and be mm-hmm. like, sort of explain, like, why are there no black women playing? It's like, well, because of this and this, but like, it almost feels like it kind of not cheapens the plight, but like underplays it. And I know that's not the story that this movie is telling because it's not what actually happened, but it is this kind of weird, like, why include it if you're not going to go into it? But again, maybe it was more in the, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I had already been thinking about the fact that it was all white women in the league. So when that happened in the movie, because I didn't remember it being there, I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And then I thought maybe there would be more of that, and there was not.
Because Jackie Robinson didn't break the color barrier in Major League Baseball till 1947, so well after the war had ended. So this is before, but it almost feels like, and again, this is maybe just, I know this is based on reality and this isn't what happened, but it almost feels like when you are literally creating a league from scratch because there aren't enough men to play or whatever, it almost feels like, well, why wouldn't we? You know what I mean? Like, I understand that there's still like the tensions there, but it almost feels like the opportunity to be like, oh, well, if they can play, like, let's play. And I know that that sort of opens up a whole other can of worms, but I feel like in a different version of this that was maybe a little bit more fictionalized, that could have been an element. And I guess, yeah, if we see how much the men in the crowd, the white men in the crowd, hate women and laugh at the women, I guess adding in people of color too would be like, well, that's gonna, you know, that adds a whole other element of like hate to this movie and sort of mockery and derision that maybe you want to keep out of it for what's mostly a family movie. Duke, what about you? Is there something about this that you don't like? What's your least favorite element of A League of Their Own?
I don't know. I feel like, again, it's a very well put together story, and I just feel like, because I've seen it now dozens and dozens of times. This is one of my mom's favorite movies, and if you guys don't know, I really love my mom, so I've watched a lot of her favorite things, listened to a lot of her favorite music, and I remember always watching this with her when it was on TV, and it seemed, I don't know, because I watched it just before we came on again. And I don't know, it just seemed a little bit long for me, but you guys know me. I always kind of get a little eh when movies are over 2 hours, and this comes in just over that.
Yeah, you're gonna find no arguments here from any of us. Like, I think we all think that movies should be shorter on average. Like, it's just, you know, I don't mind the length of this one as much as I do other movies, but every movie should be shorter. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah, they have a lot of ground to cover. Most of it is exciting baseball. The rest of it is, like, interesting drama. So, like, they used the time wisely. You know what I'm saying? Like, at least there's that. And to hear they cut it down from 3-4 hours, too, it seems that they got it as economical as possible.
If I had to pick one thing the movie bothered me, they gotta stop picking on Marlene. Marlene's all right. And they're always going after her for not being good looking or getting drunk and singing. It's not right.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's something else that I don't love about this movie, is that like it just uses her as the butt of a joke like way too many times.
The Night Games one, it's just like, if there's like some that are just like a little too mean, and I know that in the end she triumphs and she gets married and she has admirers and stuff like that.
Or like in the highlight reel when they're talking about each girl and doing like a profile, and then it's just her from like 50 feet away, and it's like, oh, and Marla Hooch, what a great hitter.
Yeah, like that's a mean, but I also like that one I kind of laughed at. Like, there's other ones that I think were meaner.
Well, it's a good visual gag, yeah.
That's a nice joke.
It's tough because, you know, there's still a product of its time that it was made mm-hmm. to a degree too. So right, you have like Madonna, who's like known for being promiscuous in her, like, she wants you to know that she's promiscuous in her, you know, entertainment life and stuff. So she's playing all the way May, right? So like a promiscuous ball player, like that's part of her persona and stuff. And you know, I'm sure, you know, there's a little bit of it with Rosie as well and everything, and you know, her boyfriend, and she has low self-esteem when she shouldn't, and then she gets the admirers, the twins no less.
Another thing that I really love about this movie is like how frankly it deals with sexism and sexual harassment and like women's labor and economic prospects and childcare and like I was talking about before, using their bodies for something other than sex and childbearing.
Well, just kind of touching on that first highlight, well, it's not really a highlight reel. It's a radio program during the tryout montage where you have a bunch of those conservative women talking about how, like, the women's league and that it's going to ruin everything and that Mr. Harvey is completely nuts, just like his candy bars. I thought that was like an interesting, honest frame of that moment. And I actually wrote that down. That's one of the few things I wrote down, is that little radio thing kind of made me giggle, being like, oh yeah, this is what a lot of people probably thought when women started playing baseball.
Right. And if those things, which are realities for women, particularly at that time when they had so fewer prospects economically, if those things hadn't been played for a joke and had been played seriously, the movie would be a completely different tone. Because it, like, when you do look at like the harsh realities of that, it's like deeply upsetting, you know? So like playing it for a joke actually kind of like lightens it up and makes it, I think, honestly, a better and more enjoyable movie.
Yeah, and one of them has their son with them the whole
Oh,
time.
yeah.
Like, he's just there and around the whole time, but it's just like one of those little reminders. And I feel like the movie also, when it gets heavy, it gets really heavy. So it needs sort of like those comedic touches along the way. And it's like, I think Duke was saying really early on, like, is really sort of lighthearted and, well-rounded and stuff. This is like a very four quadrant movie, you know what I'm saying? Like, the whole
Yeah.
family goes to see this or sits around and watches it and stuff. So, like, there's a very good balance going on here.
They kind of brush by it quickly because she kind of, the actress almost portrays it as not a big deal. But she says that her husband is unemployed and that the kid is interfering with him reading the wanted papers and that she should shut up and just take the kid to work with her. She just kind of like brushes by it real quick.
Oh, you think that doesn't still happen all the time?
Oh, I'm sure. It's kind of horrifying. Like, I did not laugh in that moment. It's like, wow.
And so him being around the whole movie as like that constant reminder of how she's treated, the whole, it's just sort of like planted there and lingers subconsciously like the rest of the film.
And so many of the women have these horrible experiences with men. Like Rosie O'Donnell's character at the beginning talks about how she has this boyfriend who's like ugly, he doesn't have a job, and he treats her like shit, you know? Which she says kind of like as a joke, but like it's real. And it's because like she has such low self-esteem. So, but the interesting thing about having little Stillwell Angel around is that like women do have to take their kids with them. And it like is just kind of, a fact of life that like finding childcare is really hard, and that's still true. If women want to work and also have kids, it's a infinitely complicated situation.
Some of the other things that I loved about this movie that I want to point out. Number one, Mike, you had mentioned it a little bit ago, and I was just admiring the conversation you guys were having, so I didn't want to interject. But when they talked about, you're saying that Madonna wants everybody to know, like, sort of how promiscuous she was or whatever, I like that there's a line in here, and I just like that Rosie says, "You think there are men in this country who ain't seen your bosoms?" So I was like, ooh, that's so meta, like, both in this world, both in real life.
That scene when they go to the roadhouse and they're dancing with the guys, like, that was her job, was to like be a staff dancer at a dance hall like that.
No, she's a taxi dancer. That's exactly what she is. She's a taxi dancer, is like somebody a club hires to like dance with the patrons.
I mean, she was doing a great job there. So I mean, all the power to her. She looked great on that dance floor. One of my favorite lines in this movie, and I know that Kara enjoyed it too, was when Rosie said, "Let's make like a bread truck and haul buns, ladies."
That's the only quote I wrote down.
Mike, in this, when we mentioned it earlier, I think either you or Kara mentioned it earlier, but Tom Hanks drinks a Coke in this movie. I was like, what is this,
Oh
Volunteers?
my gosh, remember Volunteers, where it's like they turn to the camera? It's like Wayne's World, where they do that, but like for serious. Like, they're not making fun of it. That's insane.
And my last note, in terms of the question that we will ask later, whether or not this is a Hanks on the road to being America's dad, 2 points against. Number one, when the kid eats the lineup card and he's just trying to like dangle it, like he's trying to like basically shake him upside down, not quite, but almost, to shake it out of his mouth. And then later he pegs the kid in the face with a baseball glove, which I love because that kid's so annoying. But I'm like, not quite America's dad, but overweight, drunken Hanks, he could be worse, I think. But again, not super incredibly fatherly in this
More of an
movie.
uncle kind of vibe.
Mike, is there any other notes, anything else you want to say about this before we play a couple games?
I just want to reiterate like how great this movie is, how like it's it I mean, it just keeps getting better, you know? It just keeps getting better every time I see it. I mean, I'm really pumped now. We're on our way. This is the golden mile or whatever we're calling it. Like, I'm in a very good mood from here on out, I'll tell you that much. And, you know, I've been having a lot of fun tonight.
Duke, anything else that you want to mention about this movie?
I kind of was looking around because I've realized there haven't been, like, a heck of a lot of... There's a lot of baseball movies in the 90s. Sandlot, Rookie of the Year, Major League, Field of Dreams. I think that was the late 90s. No, it might have been the 90s.
I think it was late 80s, early 90s, yeah.
This movie, out of all, like, they all kind of seem a little gimmicky, or... This is the only, like, legit... Besides, I mean... I think Major League's more of like a fun comedy, and The Sandlot's good for nostalgia if you're looking back at, as a kid. But this is probably maybe the only really, really good solid comedy, family, drama, baseball movie of that decade to me.
Yeah, I think that maybe one, I mean, it's way, way, way later. What is it, probably 17 years later? But I think it kind of might take until Moneyball to get another like great baseball movie, right? Where it's... You know, how can you not be romantic about baseball? Shout out P.S. I Love Hoffman. But yeah, I think this is definitely one of the finer sports movies of that era. And especially, you know, just across the board. Like, it's well shot, it's well made, it's well acted. Everything about it is just, it works.
Can you believe, I mean, I certainly can, after being told by the studio they weren't considering Penny Marshall for the role of director because she was a woman?
And because it was going to be too complicated for her to figure everything out as a director.
Yeah, she wouldn't be able to handle the complexities of being a director. And with this movie, Penny Marshall was the first female director to have a movie earn over $100 million at the box office.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
R.I.P. I forgot she died and made me sad all over again.
I think the timing of why we did this for the Contenders back in January is, I think right after she died, they wanted to sort of memorialize her, remember her, honor her by highlighting one of her movies. And they talked about this one. We're going to have another Penny Marshall movie coming up soon, right? Or no?
She directed Big as well, right?
Oh, so right. We already had one. Second. Yes, yes, yeah. Yes. Okay. Coward, do you have anything else you want to say about this movie? I know that you love this movie. Anything else that you would rest uneasy tonight if you did not say on this podcast?
The real Women's Baseball League actually lived on long after than just a single season. They say that the reason that it died is because the television came around, and so people weren't like going to see baseball games as much, which of course... obviously is bullshit because men's baseball stuck around, but I think it lasted until like 1953. So
yeah, I think there's like when they go to the Hall of Fame at the end, I think there's some like 1943 to 1953 or whatever, like there's like some kind of big timeline indicator demarcation whatever in that section. So I think you're right. I think it's about 10-ish years, which is, you know, pretty good run.
It actually was extremely profitable. They probably made the whole conflict of, you know, Harvey might shut down the league because, you know, they're not making any money. People absolutely freaking loved women's baseball in the Midwest.
Are there cards of them?
I don't know, but apparently it was extremely profitable. And that's on top of the fact that there actually was the National League and the American League continued on. They got ex-players that were too old to play baseball. They got high school kids that were too young to be drafted. There was still Major League Baseball, and this still thrived. Of course, yes, the television did kind of ruin it, but these people in the Midwest, they didn't have television, so... they wanted to go and see good baseball games, so they went and saw the best damn product that they had around them, and that was this amazing women's baseball league.
Mike, to answer your question, it looks like there are cards, but they were issued like long after the league ended, mostly probably around the release of this movie. But what I was gonna say is that I love John Lovitz so much, and he's so good in this movie, and apparently he was like supposed to be in the movie so much more, but they cut down his part to just like his like really good one-liners, which also kind of helped balance the tone of the movie with like the humor and the more serious parts, which is great. And like most of that stuff was actually lines that he improvised. But also Gary Marshall in this movie, Penny Marshall's brother, is so good. I love him in this movie, too.
Please call him Gary. I know that he's in this movie, but where does he... Who is he?
He's the candy bar guy that starts the league.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. Okay. Some quick Tom Hanks trivia before we play some games. So while they were filming the World Series, they had all these like unpaid extras in the crowd, and they wanted Madonna to entertain them all, and she said, no, I'm not doing that. So then they had Tom Hanks did puppet shows, Rosie O'Donnell did stand-up comedy, and other actors pretended to be Madonna and sing her songs. And so apparently Madonna was like a huge diva on the set.
I don't know. I mean, okay. Madonna is clearly an asshole. Like, we know this as a culture, but at the same time, like, the tone of the things that were written about her on the IMDb trivia, I didn't read anything contemporaneous, but it seems like maybe people perceived her in a worse way than she was actually behaving.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, I could understand. You're there to act, not to sing, right? Like,
yeah, and like, yeah. You know, she makes literally millions of dollars to perform as a musician and a dancer and whatever. And like, no, she shouldn't be doing that for free. Like, I feel very strongly that people shouldn't work for free, you know? And if that's like your moneymaker, no, you don't give that away.
Tom Hanks is not a professional puppeteer. Or maybe he is. I don't know.
He should have juggled some.
Tom Hanks gained 30 pounds for the role. Like I said, he just ate a lot of Dairy Queen nearby, apparently. His line, "There's no crying at baseball," obviously world famous, was AFI's number 54 movie quote. He didn't think he was old enough to be believable as Jimmy Dugan, but Penny Marshall told him that it was more about the way that the world had beaten down upon him and rather more than his age, and so he was able to do that. That character was originally conceived to be in his 60s, so he's definitely supposed to be like much older.
Oh, wow. I got a bit of a early Joe vs. the Volcano with him in some of this, you know, where he's like real beaten down and downtrodden,
yes.
And just, you know, kicked in the ass by
I'm
life.
I'm not arguing that with you. And then he received, which this feels early, but I guess maybe not, he received his Walk of Fame, the Hollywood Walk of Fame star, the same week that this movie came out, which I guess he was a star, but like, I know that he's a big name, but like, considering where he's about to go, it feels like we haven't gotten to the movie. You know what I mean? Like, that feels so early. Amy Tom Hanks' role considered for that part were Jim Belushi, Michael J. Fox, and Bryan Cranston, which are all wildly different movies, I think. But there are so many names for so many different roles. Some big ones. Laura Dern, I think, was originally cast in the Gina Davis role, but then had to drop out.
So was Moira Kelly. You said we weren't going to have time for this, but I'm going to squeeze it in. Moira Kelly was originally assigned to play the role of Kit, but she hurt her ankle while filming The Cutting Edge.
Toe pick.
Another one of my favorite movies.
Also another Kara connection. We have Jennifer Jason Leigh was in the running for the Gina Davis role. Nicole Kidman as well. Shout out to the other Tom. And then Michelle Pfeiffer considered for the Madonna role, which I think would have been interesting. But my favorite little bit of this was that Marissa Tomei filmed an audition tape of her playing baseball being yelled at by Joe Pesci while they were on the set of My Cousin Vinny. And they sent that in. And then Penny Marshall was like, she just couldn't play baseball, so we couldn't cast her. But I want to see that, where Joe Pesci's just yelling at her and she's trying to play baseball. Like, that is, you know, I wonder if that's an extra on like the My Cousin Vinny's, like, I don't know where that footage lives. It's got to live somewhere. Please let that exist somewhere.
Joe Pesci as the Tom Hanks role in this could have been good.
I feel like his version of this role is in the Snickers commercials, where they're like, you're not yourself when you're hungry. It's just like him as Jimmy Dugan is like him in the Snickers commercial. All right, now Kara and Duke and Mike, I want us all to think about what this movie would look like if Tom Cruise was cast in the role. We've seen him play baseball a little bit, right? In The Firm, he plays a little bit of softball, so we know that he can swing a baseball bat a little bit. But could this movie work if Tom Cruise were in the lead role or in the Tom Hanks role? And if not, if you don't see that happening, where could he fit in this world if not the Tom Hanks role?
I have ideas, if no one else does yet.
I don't know. I don't think he could. I mean, of course he could do it, but I don't think it would be as good.
Has he ever been beaten down? I mean, like, I guess he's beaten down literally by Kubrick in Eyes Wide Shut, but that's a different, like, he still doesn't look.
Maybe Jerry Maguire a little bit. Like, there's a little Jerry Maguire going on, but I'd put him as Gina Davis's husband at the end and just stick him in there.
Maybe you could stick him in the bar scene as Kit's love interest.
Oh, okay.
The only real, like, oh, there's somebody I know, was at the near the end of the movie during the World Series. Tay Leone shows up and says, yeah, one more. It's like one more out, like standing behind Kit.
Also, the guy who played Squiggy on Laverne and Shirley, which, of course, Penny Marshall was on, he is the baseball announcer. There's another guy from Laverne and Shirley, but I didn't recognize him.
But Carol, what are your thoughts? You said you had thoughts about Tom Cruise in this movie. Where could he fit? Could you see him in this world?
John Lovitz is the scout, right? But who's the other guy with the glasses?
Oh, David Strathairn's guy. So he like runs the league.
Okay. Yeah, so him. I could definitely see Cruise in that role. But I think that he would be great as a little Stillwell angel.
I love it. That David Strathairn role, you know, he was giving me vibes of from Mike, one of our favorite movies from this year that I don't think that most people don't like, Serenity.
Oh boy.
He was giving me vibes of The Rules, that guy, I guess his character name is Reed Miller, which I just found out today after watching almost two full seasons of Succession, that like the star of Succession, the guy who plays Kendall Roy, Jeremy Strong, is The Rules. So now I need to watch Serenity again. This bonkers movie with this bonkers character who says, I am The Rules, is the star of this HBO show that I love. And I was getting vibes like the sort of that like bookish kind of like pencil pushing kind of behind the scenes manipulator, master and commander, whatever. I don't know. I was just like, I need to watch Serenity. Like, all these signs are pointing me toward Serenity. I need to get back on that boat, that proverbial boat.
Play the game. Play the game one more time.
All right, Kara, I'm going to let you do, I'm going to give you the privilege of playing this game, because I want you to Stan Lee yourself. You win a cameo, you win a walk-on role into A League of Their Own. Where are you putting yourself in this movie? Are you playing baseball? Are you in support of the team? Where do you fall in this world? And if you guys want to chip in too, but I want to give Kara the dream role of a lifetime, walking onto one of her favorite movies, a movie that makes her sob. Where do you find yourself in this movie?
I really identify with Kit, like, as a younger sibling who, like, always felt like I was, like, in the shadow of my older sibling, but I don't know if that, I'm not athletic, like, at all. So, John Lovitz. Definitely John Lovitz.
I like that. Does anybody else have a place that they would put themselves in this movie? I don't know where I would be.
Or, actually, you know what? Rosie O'Donnell, probably. Just cracking jokes the whole time. All right. Being a smart ass.
Yeah. Batting top of the lineup, you know, playing solid defense at third, cheering people on. Absolutely. Mike, do you have any ideas or no?
You know, peanuts here, get your peanuts. I'll just be the guy selling peanuts at the ballpark and, you know, throwing them at people. I'll be that guy.
Might be cool to be like one of the family members of the baseball players, just like being up there being like, yo, that's my sister, that's my wife, or that's my daughter. Like, that might have been something really cool, something that maybe somebody of that time and era with a daughter wouldn't usually get to do, go out to a major sporting event and say, that's my daughter kicking ass on that field out there.
Also true today.
Or that's my mom or something like that would have been, yeah.
Well, let us now nominate this movie for some awards in what we're now calling probably the Woodies, the Tom Hanks Awards. Best film, of course, A League of Their Own. I'm also going to say best role, Jimmy Dugan in A League of Their Own. Best ensemble, for sure. Best fight, Hanks does not get into a fight here. Best dance scene, I don't think Hanks dances. Best party scene, I don't think he's really involved in a party scene. Best outfit wardrobe, do you want to nominate his baseball uniform as one of the best things?
I mean, the costumes in this are wonderful. I do have a question that none of you will probably be able to answer, and I didn't have time to Google, which is that I noticed that, like, the little icons on the patches on their baseball dresses don't match the names of the teams. Rockford Peaches, it's like a image of, like, scales, like the scales of justice.
Oh, apparently that is the city of Rockford's logo, because I just Googled Rockford Peaches, and that shows up. So it's just like city of Rockford, Illinois, and there's the scales of justice there.
And later the team's called the Bells, but it's like
the Racine Bells. Yeah, and it's like a little beehive.
Yeah.
You know, this episode comes out on October 18th. It's, you know, just under 2 weeks away from Halloween. If there's any couples out there, I don't know who's listening to this podcast, but there's a great costume here for Tom Hanks, Gina Davis, even though they're not a couple in the movie. This is a great costume. These are great
costumes.
I've
always wanted to wear one of those dresses for Halloween. I just haven't been too lazy to make one and too cheap to buy one.
So we have best film, best role, best ensemble, best wardrobe. So now best freak out, we have to do There's No Crying in Baseball, because I feel like that's more than just a line. That's the freak out. That's the kind of the explosion, that whole thing. Is there a line? I don't know that there is, because I feel like most of his memorable things, he's yelling and he's angry about things. Is there a line that he says that is should be nominated for best line here, or does everything sort of fall more into the freak out, I'm losing my mind territory?
The time, Mike, you were talking about before, it's like a non-freak out. He's like trying so hard not to freak out when he like really, really wants to yell at that one woman, and he's like really holding it in. I think that's a good freak out, because he's freaking out internally and is definitely showing externally, but he's not putting it on her.
Yeah, so like a contained freak out almost.
Mm-hmm.
A nice middle ground. All right.
He's got a line towards the end he says to Gina Davis where he's like, and it's like more of a serious line, and I'm kind of not going to get it all right, but he's like, if it was easy, everyone would do it. I don't know. I can't remember exactly, but like he's trying to get her to stay.
If it wasn't hard, everyone would do it. The hard is what makes it great.
Yeah, that's a pretty good line.
Yeah, that's a good line. I'll take that. Also, while I was looking it up on IMDb, I want to point out that this was nominated for 2 Golden Globes. Gina Davis for Best Performance, Comedy or Musical in 1993. And also Madonna wrote the original song, This Used to Be My Playground.
This Used to Be My Playground.
Best original song. But Gina Davis would lose to, well, A League of Their Own, the song, lost to A Whole New World from Aladdin, which, you know, it's hard to beat. Gina Davis lost to Miranda Richardson, who I don't know, in a movie called Enchanted April, which I don't know.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Anybody familiar with either of those?
Nope.
Well, that happened.
We can't take Gina Davis's quote of "go piss on your hat," so.
There's also the, speaking of hats, there's a line that Tom Hanks says that to the umpire, he's like, you look like a penis with a little, wearing a little hat, and he gets ejected. Like, that's not quite a freak out, but it's sort of, again, that straddling that in-between line. I will say, because I know that Duke pointed out Hans Zimmer's score before, best soundtrack theme score, A League of Their Own, I will put that here. Best or worst Hanks love story, he does not really have a love story in this. They, you know, the movie, like Kara said before, kind of a tried at one point, and then they were just like, nope. But now here, the very difficult question. I, you know, we could maybe do two if we want to push it. But best non-Hanks actor, male or female, who do we nominate here? This is maybe the most difficult thing we are going to have this entire podcast, Mike. It's just everyone is worthy, and I don't want to have like three women. You know what I mean? Like it's because there's so much good to come.
I feel like I love Gina Davis. She's wonderful in this, but she kind of stays the same temperature the whole time and like doesn't show a ton of range in this movie, whereas like I feel like Lori Petty does. You know, she kind of goes all over the place and has like a bigger range, and I just think she's a badass and I love her so much.
What I did not remember, and this was me being probably bullied into it by Mike and Austin Wolf Southern, is that we nominated both Kim Cattrall and Melanie Griffith in Bonfire of the Vanities. And if we're going to nominate both of them, we can't not both nominate Gina Davis and Lori Petty. So we'll put them both in there. And at some point, we're going to cull that down. And, you know, both Bonfires might get cut. I don't know. But for now, you know, because there's just so much good to come. Like, we got, you know, we have Meg Ryan in there already. We're going to have, you know, it's just like the Toy Story world, like everything that we're going to have, you know, the actress who plays Wilson the volleyball, she's great. I mean, there's so much good stuff to come. You know, I just, I want to make sure that we, you know, we're opening our hearts to the world, and we're going to have to make the tough, tough cuts, Mike. You know, at the end of next year when we are wrapping up Hanks with Memories, we're going to have to narrow this down in a big way. But for now, we'll say both. So, 9 award nominations. Best film, best role, best ensemble, best wardrobe, best line, best freak out, best soundtrack theme score, and 2 nominations for best non-Hanks actor female. So wonderful, well represented. 9 positions on the baseball diamond, 9 nominees. Couldn't have asked for a more baseball appropriate number. Well, thank you both so much for joining me and Mike today to pivot into the good era of Tom Hanks movies. Not that there weren't good movies before this, but this is now going to, in theory, be smooth sailing from here on out, just like Queens of the Stone Age sang, which I'm sure was about this. Duke, do you want to be found on the internet? Is there anywhere that you want people who are listening to this who are like, I like the cut of that guy's jib, I want to know more about him? Twitter, Instagram, or do you want to just, you know, live a life of privacy?
I mean, if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's DannyDukes25, DannyDukes25. You will find lots and lots of cute kitty pictures and puppy pictures and just lots of stupid pictures of me and my wife. It's nothing too interesting, folks, but if you want to come and take a look at it, you're welcome to it.
Well, who doesn't love cute kitty pictures and cute puppy? You know, it's just the best. Also, I just realized, and I don't mean to put this off, and Kara, I'm going to get to you in a second, but we did not answer the question that I've been sort of teasing all episode, Mike. Question for everybody. Does Tom Hanks in this movie do anything that puts him on the road to becoming America's dad? Does he learn lessons in this movie that will help him establish his position as America's dad, the actor? Yes or no?
Yeah.
I mean, he stops drinking.
And he learns to somewhat contain his anger and communicate in a more constructive manner. And also, he throws that baseball mitt at that kid.
He gives good, solid advice on that baseball as well.
Okay, I'll buy it. I get it. I buy it. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Okay, I'll say yes. I did not think it was going to be yes, but I've been swayed by all of you. So I appreciate that. That's fine. We're good. We're good. Yes. Absolutely. I always want to say yes. I just, you know, I don't always see the forest through the trees. So glad that you could open my eyes. Well, Kara, I mentioned at the top of the show, you are on this entire lap of Too Fast, Too Forever with me and Joe too, but also you have your very own podcast every other Thursday with Jordan Poland Clark, who has been on, I think she's been on at Tom Tom, maybe not, I don't remember. We've done so many of these spread out over such a period of time, but I know she's either been on or she'll be on. But Kara, why don't you tell the listeners about Wistful Thinking a little bit?
We watch movies that we remembered fondly from our youth and then, you know, talk about the experiencing of revisiting them as an adult and, you know, stuff like that, which has been really interesting and very fun.
So as this episode comes out, you just put out your second of 3 spooky movies for October yesterday. So what is the second spooky movie that you're doing in October?
I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Ooh, very spooky.
Yeah, we also did Disturbing Behavior, and then our third October episode is TBD, but it comes out on Halloween, so I feel like we need to do something extra special.
Very exciting. And I looked it up, and Jordan was on the Rain Man episode of Cruise Club and on the Punchline episode of this very podcast. How could we forget Punchline, Mike? A movie that I literally forgot that we had talked about until I looked it up. All right. Well, Kara and Duke, thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure to have you both. But Duke, you'll be on a couple more episodes. And Kara, you will be on our next episode of Hanks and the Memories. You'll be back here in 2 weeks with another very special guest to talk about Sleepless in Seattle. So very exciting. To have another Hanks of the Memories back to back with you, Kara.
And another movie directed by a woman.
Wonderful. If you are not listening to our Cruise Club episodes, last week we did Magnolia, which was a great episode, a great movie. And next week we're doing Mission Impossible 2, which we have not recorded yet, but we are very excited to do because who doesn't love Ethan Hunt? But Cruise Club and Hanks of the Memories, Mike, we are now in the sweet spot, I think, for both of them. Like, I feel like Cruise Club is going to be on the slight downhill just because we're at such great heights right now, but as Hanks comes up, this might be like, this is really the sweet spot for both of them, and I am very excited to be in the middle of this. So for all things TomTom Club, all things Hanks and the Memories and Cruise Club, you can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, hanks@cageclub.me. Come back next week on our Cruise Club feed for Mission Impossible 2, and come back in 2 weeks to hear Carol once again. Join us to talk about Sleepless in Seattle. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Dan the Duke Hayden and Kara Gail O'Regan of the Wistful Thinking Podcast. And we'll see you right here in 2 weeks, right here on Hanks for the Memories.
This used to be my playground. This used to be my childhood dream. This used to be the place. Whenever I was in need.
There's no crying in baseball!